Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A wonderful Wednesday to each and every one of you. It's hump day. I'm going to help you get through the week. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. That's the number to call toll free to talk to me. 888-914-9149. You can also email the program, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And time permitting, I'm going to read a cool listener email that I got, but hopefully we'll have time for that. If not, we'll do it tomorrow for sure. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the Cale Clark Show account is what you might expect, at Cale Clark Show. Well, yesterday we talked about marriage because it's wedding season. It's May. We talked about people inviting perfect strangers to their weddings just to fill seats. It was a fun show, really fun show. And today I'm going to talk about, I thought I could squeeze both these topics in one show. I should have known better. But so today's kind of part two because it's also graduation season. High school, college, university graduations happening all over the place. And I read I think it's the best one of the year so far. It's certainly a contender for that. The best Catholic graduation speech I've read. I read a couple days ago on the net. And it was actually published on the Catholic Thing website, the Catholic Thing. And it was by a graduation address by Mary Eberstadt. The Catholic author Mary Eberstadt, and this was at Magdalene College of the Liberal Arts in Warner, New Hampshire. I'd never heard of the school, but maybe some of you have attended there. If you're listening in New Hampshire, give us a call, 888-914. Maybe you were there. Maybe you were at the speech, 888-914-9149. I love watching and listening to graduation speeches on YouTube. They're always inspiring. And I remember the speech was given by the late actor Chadwick Boseman. We talked about that last year on the show. That was really great. I think about Steve Jobs' famous address. I think it was at Stanford, the co-founder of Apple, of course. He had a really, really cool, inspirational speech. Not Catholic, of course, per se, but certainly we can grab ideas that we can use from anywhere. But this was actually at a Catholic college by Mary Eberstadt. And by the way, why should we listen to her? Why should we care? Well, she's, according to Wikipedia, and I have heard of her before, but I want to make sure I got my facts straight here. So according to Wikipedia, she is an American essayist, novelist, and author of several books of nonfiction. And her writing has appeared in some pretty heady company, Time Magazine, The Wall Street Journal, The Washington Post, National Review, First Things, and many other venues. In 2017, she was named Senior Research Fellow at the Faith and Reason Institute. And there you go. So in terms of books that she's noted for, one of the ones that was really popular was called The Loser Letters. The Loser Letters, which was published in 2010. That was actually her first work of fiction. So it's The Loser Letters, subtitled A Comic Tale of Life, Death, and Atheism. And it's kind of a satire, kind of along the lines of, or in the tradition of C.S. Lewis and the Screwtape Letters. So the book is following the experiences of a young Christian who converts to atheism. I guess that's why it's called The Loser Letters. But anyways, so a lot of people who reviewed the book, and I haven't read this book yet, but it sounds interesting, said that she kind of is an heir of C.S. Lewis in that sense. And anyways, so apparently the book was adopted for the stage. It became a stage play, The Loser Letters, and it had its world premiere at the Catholic University of America in September of 2016. And the star of the show was the world champion Olympic gymnast Chelsea Memel. Or Memel. I apologize, Chelsea, if you're listening, if I butchered the pronunciation of your last name. But a lot of people loved the play as well as the book and thought it was a great opportunity to reach the millennials, especially the generation which has come to be known as the nuns. None of the above. I have no religious affiliation whatsoever. How do you get creative to reach these people with the gospel? So that might be her most famous book. I mean, if your book's made into a stage play, you're not doing too bad. So she's also written a book called Primal Screams, How the Sexual Revolution Created Identity Politics, and that came out in 2019. That's more recent. How the West Really Lost God, Adam and Eve After the Pill, Paradoxes of the Sexual Revolution, and another book called It's Dangerous to Believe, Religious Freedom and Its Enemies. So lots of interesting stuff, and that's, I haven't exhausted her catalog by any stretch of the imagination. So that's Mary Eberstadt, in case, just a little background on her. So she gave this commencement address at the Magdalen College of the Liberal Arts in Warner, New Hampshire. And this just happened a couple weeks ago. And so here's the opening quote from her speech to the students. Check this out. She says, quote, "Some people say that there has never been a harder time in the United States to be Catholic. One can understand why. Public approval weighs against us. Today, a furious secularism repudiates ancient Christian teachings about marriage and family, even as rebellion against those teachings produces ever more bitterness and dysfunction. Social cachet weighs against us. For some time now, defending or even mentioning certain parts of the catechism has all but guaranteed exclusion from the headiest parties and the most glittering prizes. And of course, for nearly 50 years, until this very month, even the magnificent institution of constitutional law clashed every minute of every day with sacred teaching. Since 1973, the highest court in the land mandated indifference to the incineration of many millions of the unborn and to the seismic scars these losses have left across America." End of quote. Wow, that's a pretty powerful opening statement. And so, I mean, yeah, you can look at this and say, wow, this is a really rough time to be a Catholic, right? But hey, that's why we're here, right? For such a time as this. For such a time as this. I'm reminded of the, I guess you could call this the epitaph of King David in the Old Testament. Here's what it says around the time of the death of King David. It says, "When David had fulfilled God's purpose in his generation, he died." I could think of a lot worse things to be put on your tombstone, right? When David had fulfilled God's purpose in his generation, he died. Okay, he did it. He did it. He did exactly what God wanted him to do in his generation. And really, we're only responsible for this moment in time. And, you know, talking about my generation, you know, as an old rock song used to say, this is who we're called to reach, the people around us, the people in our milieu, not some glorious pastime. There never really was a golden age. When we read the Acts of the Apostles, as we've been doing lately at Mass, we see that, you know, there are issues in the church from the very beginning. And fights, internal fights and divisions and all kinds of stuff happening. And on our sister program, The Faith Explained, I've been going through the life and career of James. It's called Bonding with James. And we see this time and time again when we look at church history. But we are here. This is where God has providentially allowed us to live. And so we've got to reach the people around us. And so what she did in this speech, we'll put a link to this in the show notes, by the way. Producer Jim, I'll send you a link to this so you can put it in. She really does make this, it's not just a setting the stage. She really does make it concrete in terms of how we can apply the faith to this particular situation. She gave an illustration about how a few years ago she was giving a talk at a secular campus. And obviously she's giving here the commencement speech, Mary Eberstadt at a Catholic school. So she gave a talk at a secular campus. And after the talk, she said that a young woman came up to her and she said, "Look, I want to tell you something. I recently became Catholic. I converted to Catholicism." And she was like, "Okay, what made you do that? That's awesome. But what made you do that? Was it, you know, the glories of the Catholic philosophical tradition? Was it deep theology? Maybe you started reading Aquinas? Was it maybe the art of the church? It's beauty. Maybe you took a tour of the Vatican museums and saw, wow, this is incredible. I saw the Pietà at St. Peter's. Was it reading Holy Scripture? Was it the great literature written by the saints and many Catholics throughout the ages?" And she said, "No, actually, none of that stuff made me become Catholic." Well, what was it? She said, "Well, this young woman told Mary Eberstadt that she was an only child, and she was one of the nuns, quote unquote. Not the nuns, N-U-N-S, but the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, okay? Those who have no religious affiliation whatsoever. And so she was an only child, and she was raised by a single mother with no religious training whatsoever. But when she was in high school, she became really, really good friends, best friends, BFFs, with another girl. And this girl happened to come from a very large, very devout Catholic family. And she thought, wow, this family is so, it's kind of exotic. It's kind of weird. I'm not used to this. I'm an only child. I have a single mom. And there's this family with like tons of kids. And not every Catholic family obviously has a lot of children there, but many do. Many do. And she thought it was really kind of odd at first, but she started hanging out with this girl. And more, all she wanted to do was go to their house and spend time with that family. And so she kind of almost became part of the family. She found it just full of energy, so full of life. It was so different from her own home life. And so at the end of the day, she told Mary Eberstadt, hey, the reason why I became Catholic ultimately was I wanted what they had. I wanted what they had. And that's still something that people want, even if they don't know that they want it. Sometimes they just have to be exposed to it. Now, many people have been exposed to the virus, obviously. Well, we need to expose people to Catholicism, because just like COVID, I guess you could say, the Catholic faith, my friend Cardinal Collins likes to say this all the time. He preaches about this all the time. The Catholic faith is more caught than taught. It's more kind of assimilated. When you hang around people who do have the faith, you kind of catch the fever, as it were. And so that's what it's all about. It's a little bit like your favorite teacher. I bet you $1 million you don't remember. If I were to ask you, who's your favorite teacher, whether it's high school, university, whatever, elementary school, doesn't matter. I bet you can't tell me a single thing that they ever taught about. I mean, maybe you could. Maybe you could remember a particular lecture or something, but I highly doubt it. I highly doubt it. But you probably caught what I like to call vestiges, right? It's leaving vestiges. Like, oh, you kind of catch the general sense. And that's a really, really good. So what this girl described to Mary Eberstadt, she talked about this in the commencement address that she gave at Magdalen College. She said, look, you can read all the Catholic media you want. You can read all the great books you want. And you're not going to find a better signpost for evangelization than what this girl said. I wanted what they had, this family. I wanted what this family had. Whatever it was, I knew I wanted in on this. And so she basically just encouraged the graduates to, hey, when you're leaving school, you're going out into the world. And this is where, this obviously still applies to us. It's not too late by any stretch of the imagination. When you're going into the workplace, when you're forming your home, your family, remember those words. When you're hanging out with your friends, because they capture a truth. They capture a truth. And she said that a lot of the people that we come into contact with in our lives come from very, very broken and spiritually bereft places, don't they? And Mary Eberstadt said, always remember, she said, even if they make an enemy of you, deep down, these people want what you have too. Now, you might not seem that way. If they're making enemies of you, it certainly doesn't seem that way on the surface. But deep down, they want it. They want it. They want this transcendent solidity, as she called it, faith, family, lived out as only true believers live these deep truths. And I think that when she says this, I don't think we should imagine this kind of, you know, Pollyanna-ish perfect situation. That doesn't mean that we're going to be living this shiny, happy people kind of existence, because the faith can, living out your faith in the world to the fullest, can coexist with even spiritual problems in life, problems like doubt. And I was actually reading, and I thought this was really, really raw and honest, Sister Teresa Alethea Noble. And we've talked about her on the show before. If you don't know her, she's a great follow on Twitter, big on social media. Her handle is @pursuedbytruth, at Pursued by Truth. And Sister Teresa Alethea Noble, she's one of the daughters of St. Paul. She's a media nun, and she's really become kind of famous in recent years for talking about this concept of memento mori, which seems kind of morbid when you see it. Like, she's always posting pictures of, you know, skulls and crossbones and things like that. And it's kind of become this sort of, that's her thing. And that's her theme. But it's something that the saints used to do all the time. Saint Jerome, the great biblical scholar of the church, he always used to work with a skull on his desk. And if you've seen pictures of him, you've probably seen paintings of him with the skull on his desk. And a lot of saints used to do that to remind themselves of their ultimate end. Like, all this stuff is going to fade away. Yes, we hopefully get those skulls back with more flesh on them, the resurrection of the body, all that stuff for sure. But we are going to die. And most people, they live in this kind of, I don't know, it's kind of like they want to inoculate themselves against this thought. Everything that they do, from plastic surgery to trying to get the body beautiful, working out. Yeah, we got to take care of ourselves for sure. Entertaining ourselves, amusing ourselves to death, as the author Neil Postman once said. It's kind of in many ways, our whole life is kind of this edifice that we build around ourselves to distract ourselves from the reality that we are going to die. So she's become really well known for this, and she's in Italy right now, and she is preparing for her final vows in Italy. But she posted something really cool on Twitter, and I want to read this with you. And she said, and I'm just going to kind of read this Twitter thread from Sister Teresa. She said, "I usually find some way to synthesize. I had a peanut butter sandwich before the show, so I can't even talk right now. I usually find some way to synthesize, that's what I wanted to say, the joys and pains of life in order to share something authentic online. But as some of you may have noticed, I have not been sharing much since I came to Italy to prepare for final vows." And that's true. She hasn't been tweeting as much. She's been there. And she said, "One of the few things I did share was a joyful picture of Sister Carly Paula, Sister Bethany, and I in Naples." And somebody responded, somebody commented this saying, "Wow, the joy of being dedicated to Christ." Little did that person know that though I was feeling joy in that moment, my heart was also breaking. This has led me to think about how I present religious life online. Now, she's talking about religious life in particular, but this could be true for any vocation, whether it's marriage or the single life in the middle of the world, whatever the case may be. She said, "Have I been hypocritical by sharing about my life in a glossed over way that hides the dark corners of my heart and religious life? Am I duplicitous or superficial in any way in how I present my life? Am I trying to fulfill an expectation of otherworldly joy some people have of religious sisters? Is this a form of pride? I don't know the answers to these questions, but they are questions I am asking myself among many others." One of my favorite scripture passages, she says, is the passage when Nathanael meets Jesus for the first time, and Jesus says, "There is no duplicity in him." That is a great passage, you know, and it's been translated various ways. Jesus meets Nathanael and says, "Aha, here is a true Israelite in whom there is nothing false." Anyway, so there is no duplicity in him, in Nathanael. "I've always thought," Sister Teresa writes, that was the highest of all praises. "Well, it's important not to overshare and to keep some experiences for myself and Jesus alone. I do not want to be duplicitous or wear masks or reject reality with spiritual platitudes because reality makes me uncomfortable or sad. I want to live an integrated life. Some ways Catholic spirituality is presented, however, can lead us to think we're failing somehow if our faith doesn't lead us to inevitable certainty, happiness, and peace. This way of presenting the faith is disingenuous at best and can be deeply damaging to all involved." Okay, so I think that's the money quote right there of all the tweets in that tweet storm by Sister Teresa Alethea. This idea that, okay, we can sort of paint, we don't want to like look at these other Catholic situations, like this young girl saw this Catholic family, she's like, "Oh, I want to be like them." And this idea that's this picture-perfect, you know, inevitable certainty, total happiness, total peace. But it's not always like that. And it's important for people to know that. And she says, this way of presenting the faith is disingenuous at best and can be deeply damaging to all involved. I hope I haven't presented the faith in this way, even if unconsciously. And if I have, I apologize if it has led anyone to feel inadequate. Living life deeply is painful because it brings us up close to our trembling weakness. But it's so worth it because that's right where Jesus is waiting to meet us. Please pray for me as I continue to try to live life deeply with Jesus. Definitely, you've got our prayers for sure. I'm going to ask everybody listening to pray for you, Sister Teresa Elethea, at Pursued by Truth on Twitter. She's just, what a great writer, too. What a fantastic writer. And she's written some books, too. She's written a book called The Prodigal You Love. It's kind of like how to bring people back. The Memento Mori Journal, all that sort of stuff. She's got a devotional prayer book. So it really, really cool stuff. And I just think that that's really honest. That's a really honest series of tweets from Sister Teresa. So I think when we talk about living this example for others, it doesn't mean that things are always going to be perfect for us. And because sometimes converts or reverts, when they come back to the church, they come in and then they, when things aren't picture perfect and they still have doubts, they still have struggles, they still have problems, they think, well, I'm doing it wrong. Why can't I be more like this? Or, well, I don't know. I think some of these people that present themselves as having no issues, that they may be being disingenuous. There's no way that you can go through this life and not have challenges and struggles. And I think you're highly delusional if you think that. But so I just think that when we're presenting this, and I don't think Mary Eberstadt would disagree with the good sister here. I think we have to be authentic and integrated as we do present this witness to other people. So we're going to have much more about this when we come back. I'm curious to hear your thoughts as well. 888-914-9149. You are listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back after this quick message. The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters Flexible Premium Life Insurance. For less than $12 a month, a 40-year-old can get $500,000 of coverage. Go to relevantradio.com/forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. That's right, a 40-year-old can get a lot of coverage, and some of us are a little north of 40. But we might forget the day that we graduated high school or university, but it's graduation season, and that's why today on the show we're talking about really what I think is the most inspiring Catholic graduation speech I've heard of so far this year. The Catholic author Mary Eberstadt, as she spoke to Magdalen College of the Liberal Arts just a few days ago. Really powerful speech. And if you missed the first part of the show, don't sweat it. You can always catch the podcast. It should be up within the hour after the show, and you can share it with a friend. You can download it from relevantradio.com, stream it, or from the app as well. And so one of the things that we were talking about before the break is this idea of the Catholic faith being something that's caught rather than taught. When someone says, I want what you have, that's what you're looking for when it comes to evangelism. You're not trying to ram anything down somebody's throat. They're coming to you saying, I want this. I want this. How do I get it? And so the importance of being witnesses to the faith is crucial. And in her speech, Mary Eberstadt also talked about that. She said, quote, you are needed as informed witnesses to beauty and to truth in an age when these precious commodities are grossly undervalued, an age in which some of the most vaunted academic institutions on earth deny that they even exist. End of quote. So yeah, we need to be witnesses to the transcendentals, truth, goodness, beauty. And people do what they do. So it's a lot of what people are looking for. It's a twisted desire for beauty. And somebody once mentioned this to me, a professor of mine, with respect to the plague of pornography in the culture. He's like, this is just a ginormous twisted sense for beauty. And I think that there's a lot of truth in that statement for sure, but you're not going to find it there. It's definitely a twisted and deformed view. No question about it. But this idea of truth, goodness, and beauty, people deny the existence of truth in this dictatorship of relativism, as Pope Benedict talked about. He said, we live in a dictatorship of relativism, this idea that there is no truth. If you don't believe this, you're in trouble. So we can't really get away from this idea of truth, though, right? Because even the concept of there is no truth, that's a truth statement, right? So Pontius Pilate said, hey, what is truth? And Jesus could have said back to him, you're looking at him, because truth is a person, the person of Jesus Christ. And this is what we have to bring to people. This is who we have to bring to people. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149 is the number to call if you want to react to any of this. And so Eberstadt, in her talk, she talked about some of the people in our culture who've been disenfranchised, who've been force-fed all kinds of spiritual and intellectual junk food, as it were, and even what's been happening with respect to the leaked Supreme Court potential overturning of Roe v. Wade, and we've seen the demonstrations, the vitriol that's been leveled at pro-life supporters on the steps of the Supreme Court. The sheer anger, it's almost demonic. But at the end of the day, it's hard to remember, but we have to remember that even the person who is the most angry at the truth, at goodness, at beauty, at the church, for whatever reason, they are created for love. They're created by love, by the God who is love. God is love. And they're created for love. We all want love just simply because we're human. And so people will try all kinds of different, they'll do anything to try to belong to something that's greater than themselves, that they think that they will find love there and acceptance there, whether it's a cult, a bad political movement, whatever the case may be. And so she was really encouraging people in her talk, in her commencement address, the graduating students, and I think it's great for us to remember as well, that we have the key with the church to these treasures of humanity, truth, goodness, and beauty. And we can't just kind of keep that locked up in a box just for ourselves and just kind of shove it under the bed. We've got to share them with others. And sometimes I think it's important to remember that the only way we can really even keep them for ourselves is to share them, is to give it away, to give it away. And then the other thing she talked about in her speech, the second big theme in her graduation address was the fact that the world needs the public example of Catholics. And St. Jose Maria Escrivá, who actually yesterday was the 30th anniversary of his beatification in 1992. He was canonized in 2002 by JP2. It's a lot of twos there. But St. Jose Maria used to say, hey, you can't check your Catholic faith at the door like you're hanging up your coat or your hat when you go into the office or the court or the laboratory, the operating room, whatever the theater of your work is. You can't live this schizophrenic existence. As I quoted Sister Teresa Alethea Noble earlier, talking about how she wants to live this integrated life, just like Nathaniel, in the gospel, no duplicity. No duplicity. This is unity of life. This is what we're talking about here. And so there are so many people in the culture, and Eberstadt was talking about how they're not just anti-church, they're completely unchurched. This is the nuns again. And we live among people who are, sometimes it's through no fault of their own, they're completely religiously illiterate. And she says, quote, as a consequence, eyes that have never read scripture will look to you for their definition of what it means to be Catholic. And there's a passage, she quotes a passage in the book of Hebrews that says, be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware. And she said, well, you can also unknowingly entertain converts unaware. The people that you're talking to are kind of watching you. And kind of reading your life. They've never read scripture, but they've read your life. And it's a little bit like what the New Testament says when St. Paul says you are living epistles. You're living, if they haven't read the letters of the New Testament, they're going to read the letter that is your life. Well, maybe is a better way to put it. And St. Jose Maria said, really, you're the envelope. The letter is Christ, right? The letter is Christ, Christ working in you. And you're just kind of the envelope, the venue for this action to be kind of acted out here. And so that's the kind of thing that probably happened with this young girl that approached Mary Eberstadt years ago, who said, hey, I became a Catholic because I knew this Catholic family. I came from a single parent home. I was an only child. I was kind of hanging around this Catholic family that had a lot of joy. Maybe an unexpected baby came into their lives, and this life was welcomed joyfully, or caring for elderly family members, or observing the difficulties and the joys of marriage directed towards God, living out that vocation to the fullness. And so she was kind of just encouraging these students, hey, as you kind of live your lives in front of people, understand that people are watching you. You never know who might be watching. You never know what the result might be. And you might think, man, my life isn't really making an impact on other people. But you might be surprised, because people who know us are watching us. And so that's really important as well. That's really important too. It's also important, she said, to be a Catholic in public and to live your faith well and be a great example, because we have so many, and she didn't really use this term, but we have so many counterexamples of this at the highest levels of public life. And she said, quote, many Catholics today are not only ignorant about abstract points of doctrine, but about teachings that stretch all the way back to the apostles, like major teachings of the church. The President of the United States, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, talking about obviously Biden and Pelosi, they claim to be Catholics. They claim to be practicing Catholics, but they're courting heresy. They're spewing heresy in public. And Eberstadt says they're jeopardizing not only their own souls, but also the souls of countless others who are misled by their example, colluding with evil for the sake of earthly advantage, end of quote. And it's not just the laity as well. She talks about bishops. And I heard today, I haven't seen this yet, but I heard Patrick Madrid talking about this on his show this morning, that Archbishop Salvatore Cordeleone of San Francisco, who's actually a great friend of the Cale Clark Show, he's been on the show before, he has signed a letter and he has kind of lent his voice to this opposition. There are many bishops who are kind of banded together, and they've written a letter of concern, pastoral correction, fraternal correction, if you will, to the German bishops, because some, I don't know if it's the majority of the German bishops, but a lot of the German bishops have been on this quote-unquote synodal path, and they've been espousing and promoting teachings completely contrary to the teachings of the Catholic Church on the issues of morality, sexuality, marriage. And so there's a real threat that there might be a schism in the church, that the German bishops might break away. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope they come to their senses. But we need to pray for faithful bishops like Archbishop Salvatore Cordeleone. So I have to look up his speech on this, or his writing on this. I believe it was in First Things magazine, but I'll check it out. And so what the world really wants to see is authentic Catholic teaching lived out, so that they know it's not just in theory true, it's in practicality possible to live this way. And people kind of know, and I've seen this too when in the past talking to high school students, even if they're unchurched, they kind of somehow innately know when someone is giving them the business, when someone is they're BSing them, all right? They kind of know when someone is presenting a version of Catholicism that is not legit. And so they're looking for these authentic witnesses. It's really, really important. And so this really kind of reminds me of the fact that the church has always been called to do this in the midst of secular society. I'm reminded of the second century document that was called the Letter to Diognetus. I don't know if you've ever heard of this document, but Jesus said in the gospel, in John chapter 17, he said, hey, he's praying. This is a big, great prayer to the Father. You know, protect them. They're in the world, but they are not of the world. Talking about his disciples praying for his followers, for you and me too, by extension. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. But we live in the world. So How do we live in the world and not be of the world? And that's where the letter to Diognetus comes in. It's not part of the Bible or anything like that, but it was written in the late 2nd century, and we don't even know who wrote the letter. We know who it was sent to, this dude named Diognetus, and he was a pagan. This guy was a very high-ranking in society, whether it's politically or whatever the case may be. He was running in extremely rarefied air socially. And so basically this whole letter is kind of a defense of the faith. It's an apology. It's not an apology in the sense of, I'm sorry for being Catholic. It's the word apologia or apology means a defense of the faith. And so here's just a quote from this letter to Diognetus. And you can look it up online. You can read it. It's easily Googleable, as it were. And here's what this guy says to Diognetus. Again, this is late 2nd century, but it could have been written yesterday. Could have been written this morning. He said, Christians are not distinguished from the rest of mankind by either country, speech, or customs. The fact is, they nowhere settle in cities of their own. Okay, so what he's basically saying is they're not kind of creating these Catholic or Christian communes. And some people think we should do that. Some people think we should do this. Just create these communities where we're only surrounded by like-minded people. We're kind of living in this Catholic commune. It's kind of almost like a monastic life in a certain sense. So we're sort of apart from the rest of the world. But that's not how the early Christians did it. And I don't think personally that's the approach that we should take either. So this letter to Diognetus says, hey, there's no difference between Christians and the rest of mankind by country, speech, or customs. Okay? The writer says, they nowhere settle in cities of their own. They use no peculiar language. They cultivate no eccentric mode of life. Like if you're seen as like being completely weird and eccentric, you're probably not going to, if you're like Ned Flanders on the Simpsons cartoon, you know, that kind of odd Christian guy that lives next door, it's not going to usually take very well when you're trying to. So if you're too odd in your appearance or your methodology, it's not going to work. He goes on to say, the writer, certainly this creed of theirs is no discovery due to some fancy or speculation of inquisitive men. And that basically means that what we believe as Catholics, our creed, like the Apostles' Creed or the Nicene Creed, it's not something we cooked up on our own. This is something that happened. This is reality. This was what actually happened in history. It was given to us. And this creed of theirs is no discovery due to some fancy or speculation of inquisitive men, nor do they, as some do, champion a doctrine of human origin. And how many teachings are there out there right now that are purely of human origin? They're not from above. Yet, while they dwell in both Greek and non-Greek cities, as each one's lot was cast, and conform to the customs of the country in dress, food, and mode of life in general, the whole tenor of their way of living stamps it as worthy of admiration and admittedly extraordinary. They reside in their respective countries, but only as aliens. You know, it's kind of like resident aliens, if you will. So just by pure providence, we are where we are. We are, you know, we're supposed to bloom where we're planted, as it were. Sometimes God calls you to a different place, like Abraham was called to go. But most of the time, God doesn't want to remove us from the milieu that we find ourselves in, the people that we're around. He just wants us to live for him in the midst of it and be better. And people will notice that. People will notice that. And so this St. Paul talks about this when he preached at Athens in Acts chapter 17. He's like, look, God determined the exact places where people should live. It's not an accident. The street you live on, the people next door, the company that you're working at, the people in the cubicle, everyone who's around you, they need Christ. And maybe you're the only Catholic that they know. Maybe you're the only light that will point them to the true light, Jesus Christ. So we're resident aliens, like it says in this letter to Diognetus. It says they take part in everything as citizens and put up with everything as foreigners. Every foreign land is their home, and every home is a foreign land, because their true homeland is heaven, of course. This is a good one. They marry like all others and beget children, but they do not expose their offspring. And that's a reference to abortion, even in the early centuries. It was very common in the Roman Empire as well. and people would just expose the infants. They'd just leave them out on the side of the road to be eaten by birds of carrion or wild animals. Completely barbaric, and it's still barbaric today, but it's often hidden away. We don't see it, and that's why the images of what actually happens during abortion is so jarring to people. Some think that's not the right approach to turn people against it, but like images of the Holocaust, sometimes people only believe when they see the true terror of what's happening. They marry like all others and beget children, but they do not expose their offspring. Their board they spread for all, but not their bed. In other words, they'll welcome in the stranger, they'll practice hospitality, but they don't share their spouse with somebody else. It was very common. The sexual promiscuity of the Roman Empire was outrageous, much as it is today. They share their board, but not their bed. They find themselves in the flesh, but they do not live according to the flesh. They spend their days on earth, but hold citizenship in heaven. They obey the established laws, but in their private lives, they rise above the laws. They love all men, but are persecuted by all. They are unknown, yet condemned. They are put to death, but it is life that they receive. They are poor and enrich many. Destitute of everything, they abound in everything. They are dishonored, and in their dishonor find their glory. They are calumniated and are vindicated. They are reviled, and they bless. They are insulted and render honor. Doing good, they are penalized as evildoers. No good deed goes unpunished, right? When penalized, they rejoice because they are quickened unto life. So just a little excerpt from the second century letter to Diognetus. And that's exactly the kind of public witness to Catholicism we have to do, just like our brothers and sisters in the first century, second century, third century had to do when they lived in a hostile culture. And that's how we lead people to Christ. The contrast, you know, is the juxtaposition is something that's jarring to people, but they want to find out why that is. Why do you live this way? You're listening to The K.O. Clark Show, 888-914-9149. Quick break here. Hang with me. Right back in just a few seconds. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
Explaining the Catholic faith and how you can live it and share it too. It's the Cale Clark Show. Have a question? Give Cale a call at 888-914-9149.
That's right, 888-914-9149. Got a couple lines open if you want to get in on this conversation we're having today on the show. But I want to remind you, while I have the opportunity, and you just heard during that programming from our sponsors, during the break, the Memorare was prayed. And as Father Rocky likes to say, you know, it's 30 seconds. The prayer only takes 30 seconds, but it can really change the world. And we've been praying so many Memorares for life here at Relevant Radio. And because it's May, because it's the month of Mary, it's a great time to have a memorare moment. And that's the title of Father Rocky's newest book. And you can get this for free. This is 100% free, no shipping, no handling. All you got to do is go to the website. You can go to relevantradio.com. You can also find it through the app. But the actual address, just go to relevantradio.com/moment. That's probably the quickest way to do this. And you can get your free book. And I know it sounds too good to be true, but the gospel is always free of charge. It's heresy that comes with a price, right? It really does have a price. You got to pay the price if you're not living the teachings of the church. Experience as a hard teacher. We don't want that. We don't want that. You don't break the commandments, right? You only break yourself against them, as has often been said. But Father Rocky weaves a lot of interesting stuff in this book, and I've got a copy of it. He talks about his family experiences in his formative years and how he himself also prays the Memorare daily. And it helps him to know that we're all children of God. And we have to continually remind ourselves of this, that we're children of God and also children of Mary. He's got lots of great stories about real miracles that have happened because people prayed the Memorare. And of course, we're really focusing during these times on using the Memorare to obtain Our Lady's intercession to bring an end to the scourge of abortion. And it's working. It's working. But we still need to pray. We're not across the finish line by any stretch of the imagination. Much work still needs to be done. So go to relevantradio.com/moment to get your free copy today. So we're talking about how to understand our faith, how to live it out in the public square. And I kind of was sharing with everybody this really wonderful speech by Mary Eberstadt, the Catholic author, that she gave as commencement address at Magdalen College in New Hampshire. And just before the break, I also kind of shared how some of the stuff she was saying about kind of living out your faith in public, being that public witness, reminded me of the second century letter to Diognetus. And we always have to go back to the early Christians and how they did it, because it's a great blueprint for us. And then another thing that she pointed out, too, is even later than that letter I quoted to you, the letter to Diognetus, in the 4th century, the church historian Eusebius, who wrote this history of the church, kind of a chronicle of the early church times, he talked about how some of the Catholics behaved during a plague that took place. And we've been kind of living in a time of plague, haven't we, these last few years. And this particular plague took place in 312 and 313 AD. And 313 was the year that the Edict of Milan took place, which kind of legalized the faith. And so Eusebius says that all day long, Catholic Christians would tend to the dying and to their burial, countless numbers with no one to care for them. And others gathered together from all parts of the city, a multitude of those who were withered from famine, and they distributed bread to them all. So the corporal works of mercy, and that really got the attention of the pagans, you know, this idea of burying the dead, feeding the hungry. And one of the, in a recent program, we talked about St. Athanasius. And around the time of St. Athanasius, I never got to talk about this guy, but this guy was a real piece of work, Julian the Apostate. This guy was like, he was the last pagan emperor of Rome. And when your name, you become known as Julian the Apostate, you know you're bad news. But even that guy, even Julian the Apostate, looked at what the Christians were doing, and he was amazed by this. He actually said this: they support not only their poor, but ours as well. In other words, they weren't just concerned about people in the church. It wasn't this kind of insular club. They also took care of the practical needs of other people that weren't part of the family of faith. And so it made a huge impact on pagans. And people wanted to say, just like that girl said to Mary Eberstadt, you know, I want what they have. I want what makes you tick? Why are you different? And so many people just poured into the church during those years of persecution. It wasn't legal to be a Catholic Christian. And the Mass was only for the initiated, for those who were baptized. It wasn't like you could just kind of go to a Mass and check it out and see what you thought. You couldn't go to an open-air papal Mass. Most of the popes were martyred. A lot of people didn't even know who the pope was at the time, because they would die so frequently. It had its job hazards for sure. And so it was all kind of through personal friendship, one-on-one relationships. That's how it was done. People would see how the early church believers lived, how they worked, how they lived their family life, how they lived their marriages. It was so different, such a stark contrast to what was seen in society. And so anyway, so the last thing she said to the students, her closing remarks were this. She said, Mary Eberstadt said to these students, quote, "There is one final thought that I hope that you will meditate upon during the exciting years and decades ahead. Ask yourselves what burst of providence situated your commencement in this moment of all American moments. As we have learned, sooner or later, in one way or another, the Supreme Court of the United States is about to transform the country you are inheriting. For the first time in the lives of anyone under 49 years of age, the law of the American land will shift its mighty weight on behalf of the defenseless. It will say that the routine trashing of human life is not a constitutional right after all." And so that's a great quote from Mary Eberstadt. And she just kind of reminds the students, and by extension us as well, that not to write people off, even people who disagree with us, who are fighting against us, they're not lost causes. They are lost souls. And they've been, for various reasons, they've got to where they are. They didn't fall out of the womb themselves like this, right? They've met people, they've been influenced by not the right influences, right? And so we've got to kind of correct that. And so we have to be that witness to them that's going to help them. And she said, hey, don't throw away your shot. You got to get into the public square and don't throw away your shot. It's like Hamilton, right? The musical Hamilton. You know, I'm not throwing away my shot. Got to do it. Got to do it. And so we have to do it as well. We're all kind of former pagans, right? We're baptized pagans. And so we live in this pagan world, but they are potential. Always have to remember, everybody around us is a potential Catholic and a potential saint as well. Wow. So there are no lost causes, just lost souls. Help them to find their way home. That's a really great speech. And I just got so much out of that, and I hope that you did too. Mary Eberstadt speaking to Magdalen College of Liberal Arts. Yeah, lots of inspiration to draw for today and for the future going forward. It's really been great joining you today on the Cale Clark Show. Don't forget, you can, if you miss an episode, you can always kind of binge listen anytime, any place by going to the relevant radio app. It's a great place to get the podcast, to stream them. You can play them. Look at some of our recent past shows. Share them with a friend. There's a great share button you can use, a great tool there. And the same is true for the Faith Explained. I'll be back tomorrow talking about the death of James on the Faith Explained program, 12:30 Central. Don't miss it. Death, the burial, all the cool stuff about the ossuary. It's going to be great. And I'll be back again tomorrow at this time for the Cale Clark Show. Timory's up next. Stick around. The Family Rosary with Father Rocky and Margaret's coming up after that. God bless you. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.